This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Good morning, folks. Hope you're having a great morning. Got a great lineup for you today. We're going to visit with Pat Connick, state senator. He was one of the first Republican state senators to come out against Senate Bill 482, the one that would basically rewrite state public records law by exempting almost every record out there. I know the governor has taken a public position on this issue. Doesn't make much sense to me what he's actually talking about. What do you fear? What does it matter at the end of the day? You're free to have whatever conversation you want. You speak the words, you own them. But obviously this bill is very, it's overreaching, and I don't know whether or not the bill can be saved. I know there's an attempt by Senator Heather Cloud from Turkey Creek, Louisiana, hoping to save it, and we'll talk to Pat Connick more about that at 12:30. We'll visit with Harry Rosenberg coming out in the 12 o'clock hour about the Biden administration finalizing a long-awaited overhaul of Title IX. They've been talking about this for a long time, and they're making changes to it where gender identity is now protected. What will that mean to women as it relates to Title IX? This is a disaster in the making. We'll talk about the legal implications of same with Harry Rosenberg. Jeff Palermo joins us at 11:30. We will visit with him. He's sports director and WWL LSU columnist for the Louisiana Radio Network. The Lady Tigers gymnastics team wins the national championship, and we'll talk about what that means. There's going to be a parade on the 24th tomorrow, 6:30, followed by a celebration at the PMAC at 7 p.m. 11 o'clock, we have NOLA Coalition. We'll visit with Kate Swinburne as well as Sarah Bell. We'll talk about Youth Force NOLA. There's a lot going on, folks, in the city. We're on the ramp up to Jazz Fest this weekend. In fact, I'll be out there Friday. We'll be broadcasting at the fest. We'll visit with restaurateurs, food vendors like John Ed Labor, the creator of crawfish bread. They sat out last year, but they're back by popular demand. We'll also talk to some artists, vendors from the Crafts and Villages marketplaces, like the Louisiana Folklife Village, Native American Village, Grandstand exhibits in the kids area. We'll take you behind the scenes for insights that you won't get anywhere else. So you don't want to miss our show Friday at the Jazz and Heritage Festival from 10 to 1. I want to thank the folks at Miller Lite, Tastes Like Miller Time, and WWL. We look forward to that every year. We had a great time last year, great show out there last year. It was really exciting to kind of get the behind the scenes of that. Want to give a shout out. Went out to Snug Harbor last night. It was almost like a Mardi Gras atmosphere on Frenchman Street. Place was packed. Went to Snug Harbor, had dinner there. Wanted to see Trumpet Mafia with Johnny Vodakovich. Also had Ashlyn Parker, Seth Finch, John Michael Bradford, Connor Stewart, and Robert Sherman all made up last night's performance. Absolutely incredible. In fact, Trumpet Mafia has been playing there every Monday in the month of April. Today being the last and... yesterday would be the last time that they would play together. Great performance, just unbelievable. Johnny Vodakovich on drums was just, he's always spectacular. But it's so nice to get back. I used to go to Snug Harbor all the time and just never really find time to do it any longer. And my wife knows that I actually am a big, big Trumpet Mafia fan. If you've not seen them, they will be playing at Jazz Fest. I believe they're playing this weekend, if my memory serves me correct. We will be out there to see them. Snug is a great venue, obviously. Had a great time. Check it out, folks. You know, they have a lot of great talent that plays. I'm telling you, I'm serious. The streets were packed last night. It was a Monday night. Unbelievable. And you could just tell a lot of people from out of town. Heard a lot of folks speaking French, speaking German. It was really exciting to see that. Waiting in line to get into the show. And just listening to all the different languages being spoken. It was just, I don't know, it was just a really great experience. Great to get back out there on Frenchman Street and touch it again, and had a great time. You really want to check it out. There is so much going on right now. And in fact, what's going on at Columbia University, I don't know if you've been following this, but this is where we are. Columbia University's president, Manoush Shafiq, the other day is testifying before Congress, trying to put forth messaging and trying to make it sound like she's really holding this culture of noncompliance accountable. They have rules, they have regulations, they have protocols there, not to mention city laws, state laws in New York. And at any time these students run violative of any of that, there's going to be a price to pay. And in fact, where they set up the first time in order to start this protest and really making Jewish students feel very uncomfortable, getting in their face, shoving them around, saying horrible things to them. They can't even go to class in peace. They're being harassed every which way they turn. They go in and they take care of business and they start arresting students. They start suspending students. I don't know if they've actually expelled or dismissed any students, but a number of them were suspended. And they broke that little gathering and party apart. And what happened? They went to the next lawn on Columbia's campus and they set up there. And then all of a sudden, everything changed. Pressure from the left, holding people accountable, making sure that rules were actually adhered to. Wow, what a stretch. Why would someone ask for that? Why would you have the rules in the first place if you have no intention of enforcing the rules? What is it that you fear? That foreign students won't be coming to Columbia anymore and you can't charge the full freight and cash up front and all kinds of other provisions in order to comply with a student visa, a major part of your marketing of the university, and all of a sudden this is becoming an issue, and all other students that attend this university have to suffer because you are now impotent. You have decided that you're going to let them dictate how this is going to play out, and the best option that you have, because of the chaos that exists on your campus, because you fail in leadership of this university, is you're going to go to remote classes. These people are paying gobs of money. They're borrowing gobs of money, many of which hope that the government is going to end up dispensing with whatever debt they have. You have an incoming class that sees this debacle going on. You have people who have been interviewed by the mainstream media who are about to graduate. They don't even want to go to graduation. They want to get the hell out of Dodge. Universities are a business. There are business principles, and maybe you should take a learned something from the head of Google, who said that the other day. Basically said, we have a business to run. I'm not going to allow some employee detractors to sit outside of the offices of the leadership of this organization because they disagree with what we're doing in selling cloud services to a particular country as though they really believe we give a damn. You are dispensable. For every one of you working at Google, there are 1,000 that want to come and take your place. But if you think you're going to disrupt this business, if you think you're going to disrupt the coming and goings of employees, and you think you're going to disrupt the operations of this business in order to get us to succumb to some of whim that you have, you are flawed in your thinking, and it's fundamentally wrong, and we're not going to tolerate it. Hasta la vista, baby. You don't have a job. This ought to be the same approach at Columbia. It is a business. You are running a business. You have let the students now dictate the operations of the business of educating people. And what they have learned is that it only takes a few bad apples to completely and totally disrupt the learning environment of any educational institution in this country. And once you give them an inch, they're going to take a foot and then a yard, and then they own you. And unfortunately, that's where Columbia is. That's where Yale is about to be. And the same thing with Berkeley and a number of other colleges that sit there wondering why they find themselves in this predicament. You don't get tough and then retreat. The rule is the rule, plain and simple, and if they don't want to follow the rule, suspend them, expel them. How far are you willing to let this go? They're ruining your brand. They're ruining your business. You now have major donors to your university that are saying, I'm out. I tap out. I want no part of this. These are individuals that have been very successful in life, that started their careers, many of whom with a sound fundamental Columbia education. And they're looking at this and saying, this is no way to run a business. We cannot be all things to all people, ever. It doesn't work that way. Leaders are not chameleons. Chameleons rarely are effective, credible leaders. And the sooner that everyone recognizes and realizes that, they'll have a better understanding of how they're going to achieve success in dealing with this particular situation. Yes, in the short term, will you have some bumps? Will you have some bruises? You might even have, figuratively speaking, some broken bones. But they will heal. And those with a half a lick of common sense will recognize and realize, this is the place I want to be because it's going to be safe, it's going to be orderly, and the rules actually matter to everyone, not a selected few. Everyone would be protected on this university campus. But that's not what's happening in Columbia. In fact, it's so bad in Columbia now, the faculty is attempting to coalesce amongst themselves to boycott graduation. You can't make this stuff up. The faculty now wants to boycott graduation. This coalition of faculty members, faculty and staff for Justice in Palestine at Columbia and Barnard and Teachers College, announced new demands at 3:15 on Friday at the Gaza Solidarity Encampment, calling upon faculty to stage an academic boycott of all events and to boycott the commencement until their demands are met. The coalition demanded that the university halt all disciplinary proceedings against students, including lifting suspensions, comply with a proposal by the Columbia University Apartheid Divestment Proposal to the Advisory Committee on Socially Responsible Investing, remove the New York Police Department from within and directly outside the Morningside campus, and reinstate Columbia's chapters of Students for Justice in Palestine and Jewish Voice for Peace. These people are out of touch with reality. Again, disrupting a business model, disrupting a business operation, and they really believe that these demands will be met. I say that, maybe not, maybe they're right. It'll be interesting to see what President Manoush Shafiq, how far she's willing to go. This is just one step. Now, Columbia, to add insult to injury, the story doesn't end here. In fact, there's a Columbia University business professor, Shai Davida, who is pro-Israel, right? And wanted to go to the lawn where the anti-Israel folks are encamped, the pro-Hamas encampment, as it's called, and to speak his words. So what did Columbia do? There are electronic access cards, and there's gates to all of these areas. They canceled his. Yeah, you heard right. They canceled his because it would be unsafe for him to speak in that particular area of the campus. And the rule is, if you are speaking anti to another protest that is being held, there's an area that you have to go to. So let me back this up and just clear it all up for you. So the pro-Hamas rally is someplace where they're not supposed to be. That's not the designated area for them, right? So they're letting this go on, and it's growing in numbers, and they're doing whatever they're doing. They're harassing Jewish students and the whole nine yards. The Jewish professor who wants to say something can't. They cancel his access card because he's limited to a particular area. So he's one, right? So they figure, well, we can handle him, so we'll just cancel his access card, and we'll tell him the only place that you can go is over there in that other corner of the campus. And if you don't do it that way, there's going to be a sanction. Because obviously the safety of the community has to be their top priority. Really? How does that work? Now, he's really been a thorn in their side because since October 7th, he's been trying to hold this administration at Columbia University accountable. Well, they don't like that so much, right? Like, they're not into that accountability thing. So they're going to flex their muscle and show them exactly what they mean relative to this particular professor. We are losing our campuses. We are losing higher ed. We are losing the whole accountability standard. We're allowing this culture of noncompliance to fester, to grow, and to think that every time that they make demands, you better stand at attention and give them what they want, or else. Let's see where this ends. Love to hear from you. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We will be right back. Stay with us.
Hey, everyone. Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us, and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Welcome back, folks. I just had a friend send me a series of emails that were sent out by Columbia University because they happen to have a child who's attending Columbia University. At the moment, I was just perusing through these emails It's absolutely unbelievable. The whole university is fundamentally shut down. They're going to remote learning almost everywhere. They're giving the faculty and administrators the ability to work from home, to avoid the campus. They're making all kinds of crazy accommodations for people that are here. This is a business enterprise gone amok. Absolutely unbelievable. And anyone who would ever contemplate giving these people a nickel are out of their minds. Because this can happen again and again and again, depending on the whim of the student body. Let's go to Jarrell on line one. Jarrell, you're up. What say you?
No, this is Jarrell from Slidell.
Mm-hmm.
And I was listening to your show the other day about the public records. And you gave me a bill, 80-something. I wrote it down to call my representative and see which way he was voting on it. So I called my new elected representative here in Slidell, Brian something. And I called, and it's a title company. So I'm telling the people, I said, well, I'm trying to find Brian. I want to see which way he's voting on some of these issues. The secretary says she don't have a clue. So she clicks me over to another girl that's supposed to be the legalization part of the
legislative assistant. Yes.
Yeah. So I'm talking to her, asking her about the bill and which way Brian is voting. She didn't have a clue. She says she works for the title company. So she clicks me over to another girl supposed to be an attorney. I clicks over to her. I said, well, I'm trying to find out with Brian which way he's voting. Oh, I'm the attorney for the title company. And it just kept clicking me back and forth until I hung up the phone.
Well, please understand that these representatives, that's a part-time job for them. In their position that they have with the state legislature, they all have their own personal business. But it's a sad commentary when you call their local office, because they are off. They do have funds to operate a local office. And typically most that I've had dealt with have someone there locally that fields calls from their constituents in order to deal with what you just did. Jarrell, and I'm glad you did it. I'm sorry that the outcome is that. And I wish you knew the gentleman's name, because I think there's value in putting it out there.
His first name is Brian. I just can't pronounce his last name because it's a funny pronunciation.
Right.
And I'm already tongue-tied a little bit already. And
yeah, but
I just,
you know,
I went in and asked her, what was his role in Baton Rouge? She said she don't know. I called all the representatives a lot, just ask questions, and this is the worst one I have so far.
The others that you spoke with, were you able to get to some conclusion as it relates to your questions?
Nobody had a clue in the whole office. Any of them. Nobody had a clue. They keep talking about their title company. And they wanted
I thought you said you spoke to other legislators as well.
Well, the other legislators I talked in the past.
Oh, in the past. Okay, I'm sorry. I misunderstood.
I had talked to others in the past, and it was nothing like I experienced the other day when I called and asked about this new bill you had access this public record request.
Is it Brian Glorioso?
That's him. That's it. Brian Glorioso. Okay. That's him. And these people don't have a clue what's going on.
Interesting. Jarrell, thank you so much for the call. Appreciate it. Good luck if you call back. Maybe if you wait a week and call back, they may have heard something on this show and they might have someone that is taking an interest in what he's doing in Baton Rouge, because obviously no one at his title company has a clue. Let's go to Jim. Jim, you're up. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. I enjoyed your conversation yesterday about gold. And I'm wondering how those people are affording to go to Columbia University. They must have a lot of gold.
I'm not sure. I'm sure a lot of them are borrowing money,
aren't they?
Well, they have a lot of foreign students at all universities, not just Columbia. A lot of people are here on student visas, and the reality is that my thought process is if they're here and they're engaged in this disruptive behavior and they get arrested, I think, you know, that their student visa should be taken away and they should be sent home.
Hamas.
Yeah.
They chanted last night, "We are Hamas." So they got it out in the open that they are Hamas.
Right. So they're part of a they want to be part of a terrorist organization.
Well, and they must be from Persia or Iran.
Maybe not.
And I'm wondering if you know where the Philistines came from. I do not know it. I think that giant Goliath was a Philistine. And anyway, what I'm trying to get at is the history of that. Let's talk about the Levant states. Would you like to talk about the Levant states?
Well, I only have about 30 seconds left, Jim.
Well, do you know what Levant means?
No, I do not.
Thebes. That's why they don't call it the Levant states anymore. They didn't pay their bills.
Well, I think part of the point that you're making is that whole region was made up of nomadic tribes for a long, long time. And there was always conflict in that region where one was taking over the other throughout the Ottoman Empire days and the like. And what's interesting to me is that when you stop any of these students in order to recount the history of that area, they have a very, very limited view of actually what has happened there. And they really believe that there were absolutely no Jews there prior to 1940s, which is fundamentally, historically wrong. And you hear that over and over and over again, and they're blaming of the United States and other colonial powers, as they refer to them, as being responsible for placing Jews in the Middle East. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Ready to go to the biggest ever jazz fest? Experience the music, food, and culture of Louisiana, plus great artists like Foo Fighters, Neil Young, Bonnie Raitt, Queen Latifah, Hozier, Greta Van Fleet, Trombone Shorty, and more. Listen to Tommy Tucker, me, Scoot, and Sports Talk for the Jazz Fest Password of the Day. Then go to WWL.com/contests and register to win a pair of tickets to the second weekend of Jazz Fest, plus round trip Jazz Fest Express Shuttle passes. Happy festing from Miller Lite, the official beer of Jazz Fest and WWL. We'll be giving out that word here shortly in the remainder of the show. On a text line, this always amazes me that, you know, I'll talk about a topic for 20 minutes and folks just totally miss it. Newell, you are a member of the ruling majority. I guess that's one way of saying maybe I'm guilty of being a colonizer or something. I don't know what that means. There will be no protests that these people do that will appease you. It's not meant for that. Protests are not at your convenience. It's not up to you the proper way to protest or who should be able to protest. You obviously missed what I was saying. It has nothing to do with me. It has everything to do with Colombia. Colombia has rules. Colombia, I would assume, would fall into that category of being the ruling majority by what you said. So it's easy to glean that. They actually have rules. And what's happening is that this protest that's going on right now is violating their rules. So the question is, if you're going to take the time to draft and implement rules, what good are they if you don't enforce the rules. They're the ones that are dictating when, why, and how their students can engage in protest on their property. Remember, it's an ongoing business concern. Yes, it may be a not-for-profit, and people always confuse for-profit versus not-for-profit. The fundamental difference, for the most part, is for-profit organizations have shareholders and distribute profits in a multitude of different ways. Not-for-profits don't, but the basic business, fundamental principles of business apply to both. So this not-for-profit Columbia, a business entity, has decided that there are places for them to protest and ways to do it. There's an approval process that they have to go through. And there's conduct that's regulated by Columbia, not me. The only observation I made is Columbia, you went before Congress and testified that you're all about the rule of law and that y'all have rules and that you have actually held people to account for violating those rules. In the moment in time that they left that committee room and got in their car, got on the train and headed on back to Columbia in New York City, on the west side, if my memory serves me correct, what happened? All of a sudden, the manner in which you were testifying and boasting about implementing rules and providing structure and a safe harbor for everyone went right out of the window. So it's not me trying to dictate what they do, how they do. It doesn't matter to me what they want to believe in or otherwise. What matters is when you start infringing on other people's right. The right to get a return on your investment of paying tuition to an institution that you have an anticipation that it's going to be in classroom learning and that you'll be able to meander through the property owned by Columbia because you pay for that right. Some people might call that an ROI, a return on their investment. In the moment in time that a collective group of individuals decide that they are going to disrupt that safe environment, safe harbor, and minimize your return on your investment, those that run this business enterprise should hold those individuals to account because they're diminishing the value of their product. Plain and simple. Why is this so complex for folks? Why are we getting caught up in the morality of other people's conduct thousands of miles away and believe that that justifies our conduct here and to do so in a manner that's completely and totally disruptive, causing the taxpayers here money, causing Columbia University money, causing a lot of other students who don't have the same faith, belief, or value system that these individuals have that are protesting, why should their lives be impacted by these folks? Based on the conduct of folks thousands of miles away from here, to which we have no control over, we have no connection. None of these students have anything to lose for the most part other than those that have family members that live in Israel or Gaza or the West Bank or across the Lebanese-Israeli border. Nobody's talking about the fact that Israeli families had to leave large portions of Israel because of the consistent and persistent bombing by Hezbollah into Israel. Nobody's talking about, you know, that. No one's talking about whether or not that qualifies as genocide or not. It's only this other one-way street. But again, most of these students have nothing at risk. So it's amazing to me that a lot of people on the left now are putting them on a pedestal, saying that, you know, they really stand out amongst everybody else because it's all about what's morally right. And they're willing to risk suspension or dismissal from Columbia University in order to point out what they see as hypocrisy as to what's happening in the Middle East, all the while completely disrupting this university environment and campus, the learning landscape there for everyone else. And we believe that there's balance in that. Who are these people? And why would we just let them get away with that? That's why you have rules. Is all about the balance of interest of everyone there. And we're going to put them on this moral pedestal as though they're serving the greater good while they're trampling on the rights of other people that have invested their hard-earned dollars. Their families are making huge sacrifices, sending these young kids to this university that charges more money than anybody ever cares to talk about. And these folks are allegedly morally superior to you, me, and others? Give me a break. We'll be right back. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with Kate Swinburne, President and CEO of Youth Force NOLA, with our NOLA Coalition segment, and Sarah Bell, Chief of Industry Exposure and Experiment. We'll be right back.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.